Well, it is 34 minutes past the hour of 12 o'clock. We're going to turn off the unintentional Frozen cover. I did not realize what I was playing there. And get to a conversation about our upcoming Borough Assembly meeting. I've got Assemblymember Thomas Vine Walsh here in the studio with me.
Hello, glad to be here.
And I have also got Jay Staten Gregor, who is on the wrong mic, so he's not going to be able to say hi for just a minute until I get him all set up. There we go. Hello.
Hey, thanks for having me, Hannah.
Thanks for being here. There is a full agenda tonight, so we are not going to cover it all. I'm going to give you guys a chance to talk about stuff that I may not have on my sheet here later on in the conversation, but I wanted to start off with two different ordinances that are both in their third reading. They are both about sale of borough land, and they both have a public comment opportunity tonight. And so I'm going to start with the one that seems a little bit more straightforward. It seemed a little bit, didn't seem super controversial at the last meeting. That is it is Ordinance 2024-01. It raises the cap for land value that can be sold without a public vote. Currently that's at $500,000. It's been that way, I think, since the early 90s. It was originally proposed in this ordinance to raise it to $2 million, and then last meeting it was amended to $1.5 million. So, last reading tonight, have you guys heard anything personally about this from the public? Do you have any sense of what's going on in the Petersburg public's minds with this one? Jay, do you want to take that?
Yeah, you bet. Let me just scroll back to it real quick. No, the only feedback I received was, as you can tell in the ordinance itself, last time it was updated, it was from 100,000 to 500,000, so fivefold. This is, threefold, from 500 to 1.5. So, it was originally at 2 million. I voted against the amendment to bring it down 1.5. I thought four times the amount was logical, but I still voted yes on the main thing. 1.5 is a step in the right direction. And I think that, at least from the people I've heard from, that what we can do is make it easier to sell borough land and get these things on the tax rolls and create more housing, of course.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything to add to that, Tom?
Not a tremendous amount. I think it's a pretty simple piece of housekeeping for the most part. Just updating the code to reflect increased property values. Not a tremendous amount of input from the public on this one thus far. I would say that it hasn't seemed really controversial. I understand people's hesitancy not to raise it to 2 million. I'm just happy that we're able to update the code here.
Yeah. Okay. And a reminder to folks who are listening, this is a call-in show. If you have questions or comments, you can call us at 907-772-3808, and we will get that on the air. So then the second ordinance is 2024-02, and this is also about sale of borough property. This one's about selling the property for less than assessed or appraised value if the borough determines the public benefit to the Petersburg borough outweighs the benefit of the monetary value. That's kind of I think maybe my description is less clear than it could be. Basically, selling property for less than it's valued if the result of that use of property is going to be for a public good. There was a lot of discussion on this at the last meeting. So the first was assessed value versus appraised value. And I know, Tom, you had mentioned that you thought that the either or was in there on purpose. Have you talked to the borough lawyer about that since last meeting?
Not since the last meeting, no. But that was my understanding based on my conversations with them and with Director Cabrera. The language was intentional. It's intended to accommodate a situation in which, regardless of which value is actually lower, the idea is that if the public should choose to dispose of land for below that value, they have the option to. So appraised or assessed. And as we've all kind of seen recently, assessments and appraisals sort of vary. They fluctuate pretty wildly, and I think we're used to appraisals being slightly higher than assessments, but that's not always the case.
Do you have anything to add to that, Jay?
No, it's a fairly complex ordinance. I get stuck on the either or, because I know it is not apples to apples, but when we were selling Tideland leases, the one that the Weekends were selling earlier in the year, we got into wrangling over assessed versus appraised. And I'm of the mind that if somebody coming to us wanting to buy borough property, they would pay for the appraisal and we'd go from there. It seems like a good standard practice to have, you know, if we're going to be in the business of selling borough property.
I was curious because it seems to me that if one person is going to buy, or one business is going to buy property at an appraised value, and then a different individual is going to buy it at an assessed value, generally assessed is much lower than appraised. And so I was curious whether that might create a situation, you know, where folks are frustrated because they feel like, oh, well, mine was appraised. I had, you know, even though it was sold below appraised value, I had to pay more because the appraisal was so much higher than, you know, my neighbor's assessed value over here. Do you see that being a problem?
I don't think I understand the question. There are multiple kind of processes for disposing of borough property. And this is just one of them. I think in the case of the Tideland leases, and admittedly that's still kind of, you know, indeterminate because there isn't, you know, as we discussed in a couple of meetings back, there's not a whole lot of code speaking to the process for disposing of Tideland leases. But I believe this is mostly reflected in the code. And personally, I think that, you know, when the borough is selling property normally, you know, selling for appraised value, I think makes a lot of sense. You know, especially if you're looking at a Tidelands lease that's, you know, being occupied by an existing business and they're thinking about buying it, that's, you know, I think that makes the most sense. You have a duty to the public to to make a reasonable, you know, kind of a commercial arm's length sale there, right? And not give somebody a special deal.
And just to clarify, assessed value is the value that's determined kind of on average by the borough, and it's for tax reasons. So that assessed value is what the borough then uses to determine property taxes, whereas appraised value is done at per specific piece of property where an appraiser comes in and actually is paid to determine how much that specific property is worth. And the appraised value is almost always significantly higher than assessed value. And then if you are generally, and I, you know, I know this isn't in borough code, but generally if you're buying land, you know, a piece of property or house, the person who's buying it then has to pay that appraiser fee. And I know that was a bit of an issue with the Tidelands because it wasn't stipulated in borough code who is then going to be paying for that appraisal.
Yeah. And I guess kind of getting back to your original question, I think the intent of the ordinance that I've proposed here is to allow the assembly, to allow the borough to kind of make a non-economic decision if deemed in the public interest. Mm-hmm. So that's why, you know, and it has both the assessed and the appraised. So the idea is that we're not choosing one value over the other, but basically just, you know, providing for, you know, whatever situation, you know, if necessary, if in the public interest, the borough would be able to go below that value. But I think in other situations, in other disposals of real estate, and this is very specific, this is only for large disposals in the public interest. Other disposals, I think, and I believe that is the practice, is to sell it at appraised value.
Mm-hmm. Or at auction.
Yeah, or at auction. Yeah.
But having the option of assessed versus appraised to you makes sense because then it is more flexible for the borough.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Anything you want to add, Jay?
Nope.
Okay. And then another discussion point, Assemblymember Scott Newman said that he was concerned that there's no mechanism in the ordinance to ensure that the savings that the buyer would be getting at buying the property below assessed or appraised value, that those savings would then be passed on to whoever was supposed to be benefiting as opposed to just the developers. And I know you talked about there being some language in Section F of the ordinance addressing that. But I was curious, who enforces all of that?
Well, ultimately, the borough. I mean, you know, it's these are our ordinances. We have to enforce them. It's us.
Mm-hmm. What's the enforcement mechanism, though?
Well, I mean, it depends. I think it could be different depending on the situation. You know, and this ordinance and Section F in particular are designed to kind of accommodate a number of arrangements. I do think, you know, in light of people's response to Section F, I agree that the language should be tightened up. And I think at this next meeting, I'll propose that we replace a may there with a shall, that the assembly shall essentially impose conditions on the sale. The problem is that you don't want to kind of detail too much what conditions should be imposed, because each sale and kind of each disposition or disposal of property could be different for a different purpose. I think the purpose that's foremost on my mind, obviously, is creating housing, but that's not necessarily the only thing that this ordinance would be used for. But I do think, you know, that's a really important part of it. And as far as enforcement mechanisms, I mean, ultimately, I think a lot of it would probably arise from the purchase and sale agreement for the property. That would be a good place to put the covenants and conditions on the sale. If there were some sort of profit capping, you know, on the part of the developer, you know, it would be possible to kind of hold money in escrow potentially, and, you know, pending everything working out right, you would release money if the developer failed to abide by the rules, you know, set out in the purchase and sale agreement. Perhaps the borough would then keep the money held in escrow and the land would just be sold at a normal rate, not for a discounted rate. But there's a number of options, definitely. And you know, we've tried to set this up basically so it's not going to put kind of an impossible, you know, administrative and enforcement burden on the borough, because obviously you have limited resources. So I think that's why it doesn't have, you know, a litany of really difficult conditions, you know, that are going to be imposed on every sale. But it does, you know, you have to show public benefit. You have to run it through the public hearing process, through multiple boards, in addition to some other details. And ultimately, the idea there is to kind of deal with things on the front end, and not, you know, tie somebody to an agreement that they have no intention or ability to fulfill, and then be in a position where you have to enforce. The idea is to ensure, you know, that's, for instance, why, you know, this kind of requires plans and conceptual designs and that sort of thing on the front end, whereas currently our code doesn't envision anything like that. So that's, addressing stuff on the front end before you get in a position where you do have to enforce. But ultimately, yeah. You know, that's, I mean, it's, if we didn't want to enforce anything, we shouldn't have laws, you know, you gotta bite the bullet every once in a while. It's unpleasant, but you know, it's for the best.
Do you have anything to add there?
Yeah, you bet. Just for those listening at home, again, this is, this involves, developments that'll have 20 or more residential lots. So this ordinance, in all fairness, has a pretty narrow scope of, you know, 20 lot development. I don't know necessarily if that's going to, how much it'll do in the big picture for the average person building a house, wanting to buy land. But I don't see any harm in that. My only hang up, and I mentioned at the last meeting, is I still find the term public benefit subjective. I know it gets run through a lot of different things. But I always fear the law of unintended consequences, where an emotional plea of why this is a public good, it can be persuasive. I've seen arguments like that happen through the years from planning and zoning, where they vote no on a conditional use permit, you know, because of personal animosities towards a person, or vice versa. And that's not the norm. The board does a really good job on the whole, but I've seen a couple outliers like that have set bad precedent. And I guess I would cross my fingers and think that people would do their due diligence when determining what public good is. But given the scope of this ordinance, I'll likely be supporting it tonight, depending on where some of the amendments go.
Okay. I was just going to ask whether you were going to support it. I'm assuming that, Tom, you will support it, and you're probably going to put forward a couple amendments, you said.
Yeah, I'll put forward an amendment, and I believe there are some other assembly members that have changes, and I'm Yeah, no, I imagine whatever changes are proposed will be entirely acceptable to me. I mean, my goals here are pretty straightforward. You know, just trying to kind of flesh out our code, which is a little light in this area, and also create an opportunity for housing. And yeah, I mean, the public benefit is definitely, it is a subjective term for sure. But, you know, that's why we've tried to put ample public process here. You know, and I guess, you know, the way I think of it is I feel like this is really an opportunity for Petersburg to seize its destiny. I mean, if we just kind of, you know, shy away from subjectivity or something, in a sense, we're letting the future development of this community be determined by someone else. I don't think that's correct. So subjectivity, yeah, you know, but this is the subjective opinion of our entire community. So I think that's an important part of it. You know, the way we've set this up, there's ample opportunity for public input. You know, there's numerous levels. And ultimately, I do believe that the assembly is representative of the community here. We have a diverse set of opinions on the assembly. It's a really good group of people, and Petersburg as a community is very involved and very vocal. You know, our campaigns for assembly seats are always, you know, pretty exciting. I think people really care. So I think that's the important part. Having subjective language in your ordinances or having, you know, situations where people need to come together and make a decision, you know, based on what they think is right, you know, in the public, in the open. It's a difficult part of governance, but it's like the most important part. So I hope we'll give ourselves the opportunity to do that, because as things stand now, I feel like we're not really seizing the initiative here in terms of the housing crisis. We're kind of letting market forces make decisions for us, which that's one way to do things, but I worry it's not a sustainable. Well, I don't know if that will be good for Petersburg in the long term. I think we are, you know, maybe not positioned to benefit from, you know, it's difficult to make a community succeed in this part of the state, in this state, you know, small towns. I think we need to do what we can for ourselves, because if we don't, you know, the politics that are built out of big cities, big communities like Anchorage or down the lower 48 are going to call the shots, and that's not always going to be beneficial for us. You know, if we let market forces determine the price of our properties, those properties are going to become more and more expensive. You know, so that's maybe that's good if you know, you're in the window selling business, but not all of us are. So that's kind of where I'm coming from here. You know, I'm no hate to window sellers. I think they're great, but you know, we gotta get houses here for everyone. I think having a kind of a multifaceted community is the best part of living in Petersburg. We're not all the same. We have everything here. It's one of the coolest parts of our town, you know? So I want to keep it that way.
And if folks listening want to comment publicly during this meeting, the public comment period is open at the beginning of the meeting. And the meeting is again at 6 p.m. Going to shift gears here, because at 5 p.m., you guys are going to go into executive session. And this is to discuss the current lawsuits that the Petersburg Borough is involved in. This, correct me if I have this wrong, but this came about because of you guys were another ordinance on the agenda is looking at known changes to the budget. There's $60,000 in lawyer fees added to that adjusted budget. And last meeting time, you had mentioned, you had talked briefly about taking those out, and then I don't remember exactly how it worked, but basically it was decided that you would go into executive session at 5 p.m. to talk about what all of those lawyer fees are being used for, and really help everybody understand what they were used for before they decided whether or not those should be in the budget. Do I have that right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So just to briefly remind folks what these lawsuits are, and please correct me if I have any of these details wrong, but my understanding is that 2 years ago, Petersburg Chief of Police James Kerr filed a lawsuit against the borough of Petersburg for allegedly defaming him and presenting him in a false light, and then the borough has since refiled that case as a civil rights suit in district federal court. And then there's a second lawsuit where Don Koenigs is also suing the borough for not fulfilling a records request that he submitted for Kerr's original complaint to the borough, and that was in HR complaint to the borough.
Yeah, that's close enough.
Close enough. Okay. Yeah. It's not usually what I go for, but
no, it's better than, it's better than close enough.
Okay.
My bad. You got it.
My first question is just a basic, like, why can't you guys talk about this in the regular meeting? Just for folks who are like, why the heck are they going into executive session?
I'll open with it. I mean, I pushed for the executive session last meeting because I was concerned that some of the dialogue may drift over into privileged information, and that could compromise. And there are two outstanding cases. They're being litigated right now. I don't know. Anything you say can be used against you in that regard. And I was concerned that some of the dialogue seemed a little loose around the topic. I mean, again, they are active cases. So, and we'd received some more information from Attorney Gaddy prior to that last meeting. And I was under the impression maybe some people hadn't received that information yet. There's some disconnected stuff. So it's made more sense to get everyone on the same page. Was my intention of pushing for that, at least.
Okay.
And just one last thing. And to clarify, what can be said in open session. I know tonight that's something I'm going to be inquiring about. There is some very untrue statements made during visitors' views last time regarding the cases. And I was hesitant to correct that because I don't know what fine line to walk in terms of that. So that's I know for myself on that, and when I'm going to get clarification what can be refuted and when I should keep my mouth shut.
You're talking about the public comments that were made at the last meeting.
Correct.
And you wanted to refute those but weren't sure whether you could.
Correct.
Gotcha. Okay. And is this $60,000 for work that has been done or work that is expected to be done?
The $60,000, I believe that's just an adjustment to our overall legal budget, our budget.
Gotcha.
for legal fees. I do think that the reason it's showing up in a supplemental budget is because the fees associated with these two lawsuits have continued to grow, perhaps more than, you know, during the formation of the original budget, more than the borough thought they would.
Okay.
So there's not a direct, if that makes sense, link between, but I do think that I think that the fact of the matter is that both these cases are fairly expensive and they are costing the borough some money. So it's just important to check in with the borough attorney and kind of give the public some, you know, indication of what we're spending our money on, basically, what's happening.
And I saw some in the correspondence section of the agenda, I saw somebody asking why couldn't the borough just turn over that information in the Keating suit? Why not just fulfill the records request?
That's a good question.
Well, I mean, the Deamer report was turned over, and that was not being... one of the speakers that evening did not acknowledge that reality, so I don't know specifically what they were referring to, but in general, that's another question I'll be asking this evening, because those two cases are so intertwined. One does not exist without the other. I think that'll be some of the clarification we get from the attorneys tonight on that.
So after you guys find out what you can and can't talk about publicly, when you are talking about the adjusted budget later on in the public meeting, are you going to be able to fill the public in a little bit on some of those uncertainties?
Depending on what the dial and whatever guidance we get in terms of privileged information. But I mean, I'll be very clear. I'll be voting for that. I mean, as a borough, we have to pay our bills. If we decide to discontinue legal services, then I mean, that means the borough is admitting guilt, and both the borough itself and Debbie Thompson, who's being sued personally, we're just leaving them on the hook. I think it's negligent to leave them hanging like that. I mean, I'll be voting for it. I mean, no one likes high legal bills, but when you're being sued, you have to defend yourself. That's just the cost of doing business, unfortunately.
I was going to ask, what would happen if the borough doesn't pay those $60,000?
Well, and I mean, sure, before we kind of went down that road, I confirmed with the manager that, you know, we weren't in any risk of, you know, paying an invoice late or something, God forbid. Nobody wants to do that. No, I have no intention of, you know, suggesting the borough shouldn't pay legal fees when they come due. I just think that, you know, it's good practice when you get a big invoice from the attorneys, you sit down and meet with them and talk about it. That's pretty standard. You know, and I think, frankly, I guess I was a little upset that maybe there hadn't been a session scheduled prior to this showing up on the supplemental budget. You know, I think it should have gone without saying, but you know, that's okay. We're gonna have this discussion here prior to the meeting, like you say, so we'll be able to kind of get all the information we need in order to make a reasoned decision about the budget going forward. So I think that's really important. But yeah, again, no, I don't when I cut off, I don't think we'd be able to do that. You know, and I think it's I'm looking forward to the executive session. You know, I don't think it's really necessary to speak about my personal opinions about any of this. You know, I just want to make sure that the borough's money is being spent wisely, and you know, that we're kind of keeping close eyes on how much this litigation costs us, because part of litigation strategy is managing costs going forward, not costs that have already been incurred, but the ones that are coming. I think that's an important part of it, especially when, you know, we've got the school going through their budget and seeing how many paper clips they can, like, you know, for go buying so they can pay for teachers and stuff like that. You know, it's like, come on, we're going to just throw away $60,000 on this case.
It's not throwing away $60K though, really, is it? I mean, what's the alternative? Just don't defend ourselves?
Well, I mean, you know, I think my hang up, you know, without really getting any specifics, is that the in the public records request, as I understand it, and this is part of the reason I'm really looking forward to speaking to the legal team, as I understand it, the court is you know, ruled in favor of has released certain information.
Mm-hmm.
And the holding that released that information, we could continue to fight, but ultimately I kind of support transparency, you know, and unless there's like a serious harm, and that's another thing, I'm hoping that people will be able to clearly articulate the harm that we're avoiding here, you know, and I think it's really important to always promote transparency. I don't want to give the public the perception that, you know, something is being hidden or something like that, you know, and I'm really concerned by these comments we're getting from the public, you know, like at the last meeting, there's a growing perception that the borough is trying to hide something when, you know, I'm confident that's not the case.
Agreed.
So I believe, you know, transparency is an important policy. It shouldn't be, you know, just to win a lawsuit. But, you know, that said, this is already in motion, so there's really very little I can do.
And
it's in the hands of the attorneys and the legal team, the borough attorney. You know, really, as I see it, the assembly's role here is to make sure that the bills are paid and to make sure that they, you know, kind of are weighed in relative importance to all the other costs that are, you know, coming to the borough here as we sort of try to balance a very difficult budget.
All right. Well, we are past our time, and I know that, Jay, you have to run to an appointment. Thank you for coming in.
I do. Back to my paying job. Thanks for having me. I'll catch you later. Yep.
Thank you for coming in, and thank you so much, Tom, for joining us. Coming up next, we have Street Beat with Laura Lee Mason.